This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
When being cheap is good for business.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. In times like these, less equals more. Shoppers looking for bargains on such necessities as food and pharmacy items help boost profits at Walmart stores in the first quarter of the year. But there's a gray cloud attached to that silver lining despite the solid start to the year. The world's biggest retailer is warning that results in the current quarter could miss Wall Street estimates as customer paychecks get stretched thin. Overall retail figures out this morning from the Commerce Department suggest consumer spending is more resilient than many analysts anticipated. Still, sales dipped again last month, 0.2%. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch has more.
Auto sales were off nearly 3% in April. Excluding that, retail sales were actually up 0.5% last month, well above most predictions. Joe Scarupa edits RIS News, a retail industry publication. He says the economic slowdown so far has hit Wall Street far harder than Main Street.
The perfect storm for retail sluggishness can really be seen in layoffs. Until we see unemployment spiking up 3 and 4%, I don't expect to see a consumer spending dip until that happens.
This month, the Bush administration started sending out checks as part of its economic stimulus package. That's $100 billion that retailers are hoping will juice sales in May. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Investors are trying to figure out how they feel about those retail numbers. All three of the major indexes are clinging close to the center line so far. The Dow's off 15, the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 also down fractionally. PC giant Hewlett-Packard is acquiring Electronic Data Systems Corporation in a deal valued at nearly $14 billion. The deal positions HP as the world's second-largest provider of technology services after IBM. Many South Africans are welcoming a U.S. Supreme Court move that effectively allows them to sue companies accused of profiting from apartheid. So many justices are on the high court reporting conflicts involving their own business interests that they were forced to let stand an appeals court allowing the cases to proceed. The three lawsuits target dozens of companies accused of dealing with South Africa's former apartheid regime, including Chevron, Citigroup, and Ford Motor Company. Marketplace's Africa correspondent Gretchen Wilson has more from Johannesburg.
Victims of South Africa's old apartheid regime are celebrating this morning. They say tens of thousands were killed and tortured under apartheid, while the millions of the country's black majority were economically disenfranchised. The plaintiffs say these companies profited while propping up the apartheid government and its security forces by supplying oil, weapons, and technology support. One of the groups seeking compensation consists of 55,000 survivors of human rights abuses. The director says many affected by the violence remain destitute and struggle to reintegrate into South Africa's economy 14 years after the end of apartheid. She says members of the group are seeking damages, and she's hopeful that the new development will force the companies to come to the negotiation table. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
What would you do if you were given a last-minute seat on a flight, only to be ordered out of the seat because an off-duty flight attendant didn't want to squeeze into an employee jump seat? But wait, there's more. A New York man is accusing JetBlue of telling him to hang out in the plane's bathroom for, as they say, the duration of the flight, and that he couldn't even use the jump seat because it's for employees only. He claims he suffered extreme humiliation and is suing for $2 million. The rising price of oil has literally been fueling more deals with reputedly corrupt governments in the push to tap new reserves. The tales of those deals rarely see the light, but a bill set to be introduced in Congress today would change that. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
The bill would require all oil, gas, and mining companies registered with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission to publicly disclose the payments they make to foreign governments. Oxfam America is part of an international coalition pushing for the bill. Spokesman Ian Gary says the current system of secret contracts breeds corruption.
And in that situation, it's extremely difficult for citizens in these countries to hold their own governments accountable for how the money is being spent.
Gary says the oil boom could bring hundreds of billions of dollars to Africa. And he says transparency would ensure more of that money reaches the people who need it the most. But Georgetown University law professor Donald Langvoort says the Securities and Exchange Commission doesn't typically enforce rules with social or political aims.
That's something the SEC has resisted.
Instead, he says, the agency is in the business of protecting investors, the same ones reaping the benefits of Big Oil's record profits. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Tuesday, May 13th on marketplace.org. Twin disasters in Asia. That's what the world aid community is up against. 32,000 have died in Myanmar following a cyclone 11 days ago. And the death toll from yesterday's earthquake in China, by some accounts, is approaching nearly 20,000. Still, disaster aid groups say there's enough to go around so long as the receiving countries cooperate. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
Saving lives is an ongoing negotiation for Dean Hirsch, president of World Vision International. His group finally has Myanmar's blessing to fly in relief supplies. And the ruling junta agreed to Hirsch's key condition, that local World Vision staffers hand the stuff out.
We don't want to just turn our relief supplies over to the military, because we want to make sure that the relief supplies get to those people who need them.
Myanmar ranks as the world's most corrupt country, according to the nonprofit Transparency International. World Vision's next hurdle? To get more aid into Myanmar. Aid groups say it's needed, but not guaranteed.
Obviously, if the government of Myanmar does not agree to fly any more relief supplies in, then I would say we will divert the relief supplies that are ready to get them into China to help the people in China.
Today, Beijing said it will accept money and supplies from donor nations. But there's a familiar catch. China is not allowing foreign aid workers in either. Not just yet. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
The European Union could soon lift a ban on U.S. imports of chickens and turkeys. That would open up a market worth more than $200 million a year for American farmers. From our European desk in London, Stephen Beard reports.
The EU banned American poultry 11 years ago. The Europeans objected to the American practice of washing the birds with chlorine to kill bugs like salmonella. The EU claimed that process itself poses a threat to human health. But pressure to lift the ban is mounting. The Americans have insisted the issue be resolved by an EU-US trade council which meets today. Andrew Bounds of the Financial Times says the Americans see the chickens as the thin edge of the wedge.
There have been a lot of issues about food over the years and different ways of processing food. I think the Americans think if they can crack the chickens, they can probably push ahead with beef, corn, and many other things which are not allowed on the EU market that they produce.
He says the chicken ban should be easy meat for the Americans. There was always a whiff of hypocrisy about the chlorine issue. Some European producers use precisely the same method on chickens they export. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
We're seeing more and more evidence of baby boomers planning to work in some capacity during their retirement years, some because they'll want to, some because they'll have to. Either way, it's likely many baby boomers will convert a good portion of their assets into something that can generate a little income. Commentator Todd Buchholz says that transition could spell trouble.
Ah, the boomers. It's always the boomers. Their music, their nostalgia, their neuralgia. Those 76 million boomers, the generation that shouted, hell no, we won't go, is shouting it again. But they don't mean Vietnam. They mean, we're not dying. And if someday we do pass away, well, we're going to look great because we're pumped up with Botox, breast implants, and every antioxidant we can squeeze into a soy milk latte. People who retired back in 1950, on average, lived another 12 years. Now that number has doubled, and when a baby boomer couple retires, odds are at least one of them will be smacking tennis balls well into her 90s. Which brings us to dividends. Serious scholars warn that we are careening towards a stock market crash in 2011, when the boomers start hitting age 65. Why? because retiring boomers will need a steady income beyond what they snatch from the Social Security pyramid scheme. They will sell their stocks and jump into bonds, which will pay them a steady stream of income. But that may not be so good for the rest of us who would like to hang on to our equities. How can we avoid this fearsome future? By keeping dividend taxes low. Dividends can give boomers that regular stream they need to keep paying for their Pilates classes. Since 2003, dividend payments have climbed over 12% per year. With a low 15% dividend tax, companies pay out more cash. But if Congress jacks up taxes on dividends, well, boomers will more likely dump their stocks, grab those bonds instead, and go off to pasture dancing to that great boomer icon, James Brown. Papa's got a brand new bag. Of course, the rest of us will end up holding the old bag.
It's one of the first rules of investing, and it sounds like common sense. Don't buy what you can't understand. Trouble is, Wall Street is engaging in all kinds of confusing financial practices behind the scenes these days, as Bear Stearns investors learned the hard way. Has financial innovation gone too far when even many PhDs can't seem to explain how things work? We've been putting that question to a few experts, Harvard University finance professor Josh Lerner among them. He thinks things crossed the line when Wall Street bankers came up with all but incomprehensible investment offerings.
Extremely complex hybrid securities piled on top of each other, where certainly their risk and return properties weren't well understood, and where it seems that they weren't solving any kind of fundamental economic problem by being set up. It was almost like it was innovation for the sake of innovation itself.
Or, he suggests, simply for the profit of the investment banks promoting those obscure investment offerings. As long as everyone was making money, there were few complaints. Lawmakers and regulators have kept their hands off for decades to encourage financial innovation. But Lerner thinks regulators have to be inventive now, too.
Just as there is a need for innovation in terms of the kinds of financial securities that are being offered, there is a need for innovation in terms of what kind of roles and what kind of information regulators have, greater transparency in the system.
Sounds good, but I think in many ways it's a cop-out. There are certain practices that are just unwise.
That's Michael Lewitt, president of Hegemony Capital Management. He argues transparency is worthless as long as executives are intent on using sleight of hand.
There was a lot of disclosure about what Enron was doing. There was only one problem. It was almost not understandable. Some of these things that they're doing are so complicated that you can be as transparent as you want and disclose it all you want, and most people are not going to understand it.
Lewitt says the only thing Wall Street bankers have made clear lately is that they can't be trusted to make things clear. And that leaves it up to regulators to draw very sharp lines about what's permitted and what's not. Democratic Congressman Barney Frank chairs the House Financial Services Committee. He's convinced new regulation is necessary to bring clarity to the financial markets.
As we talk about these plans, I did have one person say to me, well, you know, Congressman, some smart people don't agree with what you're proposing. My answer is yes. No dumb people cause this problem. You had to be very smart to think up things that were as exotic and as potentially damaging.
And then again, just maybe smart like a fox, as investment whiz Warren Buffett once observed about some confusing annual reports. If I can't understand it, I know they don't want me to understand it. Let us know your thoughts. Just visit marketplace.org and click on the link that says Contact. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. Thanks very much for making us a part of your morning.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.